On this episode of Video Culture, we'll talk 80s body switcheroo movies, vice versa, and 18 again.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills, there will be thrills, and there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
All right, I am Ryan Acree.
And I am Matthew Essery.
Mm-hmm. Episode number 001.
The very first.
The very first.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, so thanks very much for all of our listeners who have decided to listen in on our podcast. We're just two guys talking about movies, and the subject for today of the movies that we're going to discuss is this weird phenomenon that happened around in the late 80s where two people kind of switched bodies. You had these body switch movies, and so the first movie that we're going to talk about is this movie 18 again.
Such a strange movie.
It is kind of odd. 18 again. I'm just looking up Wikipedia. Here is a 1988 comedy film starring George Burns and Charlie Schlatter, which I don't even know who. Schlatter. Yeah, S-C-H. L-A-T-T-E-R.
The most I can tell you about old Charlie Schlatter nowadays, he's a voice actor, mostly does cartoon work now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's all I really know about him. But George Burns is, of course, the perpetually old, cigar-smoking, pun comedian.
He kind of just plays himself.
Yeah, he plays himself, yeah.
Yeah, he's this millionaire businessman, and the other guy, the Charlie...
is his 18-year-old grandson.
Right, who the character's named David, George's name Jack Watson. He has an 81st birthday, and he wishes to be young again. There was like a car accident, like on the way home from his birthday party, and like they switch bodies.
Yeah, the car is crashing, and they hold hands as the car is about to crash. Because I know when I'm in a life threatening situation, first thing I'm gonna do is hold someone else's hand, and they crash through like a storefront. And when Jack wakes up, he's in the body of his grandson.
Now, everybody listening, just always know that there are going to be spoilers, okay? We're going to talk about the movie.
No one's going to care about spoiling this movie because I'm all going to give you another spoiler, Ryan. It's not very good.
No.
So at this point, I feel like we're doing a public service announcement by sparing the people from having to watch this terrible, terrible film. But why is it terrible? We're going to get into that.
So we know the plot. We know kind of what happens. David's kind of like this, character who is this kind of, he's kind of a nerdy character.
Yeah, he's the opening scene of the film is very weird. You don't really know what's going on at first, but it looks like him and Pauly Shore. Yes, Pauly Shore is in this movie.
Who knew that Pauly Shore was in this movie? He's only in it for about like 5 minutes or something.
And you know the film's pretty bad when Pauly Shore gives the most nuanced performance out of everyone in the entire cast. Like, he's literally the most realistic human being in the entire film as like the main character's buddy. But so apparently the grandson, I'm not going to be bothered to say his name again because it really, I just can't be bothered, is an artist. Basically, he paints murals. And there's no like context for this when the movie starts. It basically opens with them painting a mural in the dark and running from the cops. Cold open, that's how it starts. Then it cuts to the stuff with George Burns being old and having his birthday party. Apparently, he's a wealthy businessman of some sort. And he wishes to be 18 again. And so as he's blowing out the candles of his cake, his grandson blows them out with him because they're close. And they drive home. Maybe George Burns is drunk. He seems like the kind of guy who'd be drinking at his birthday party. They crash. He wakes up in a hospital bed and realizes he's in the body of his grandson.
Well, he's 81 years old. Why is he driving a Rolls
Royce?
That is
an excellent question.
Why is he driving a Rolls Royce?
Like, he looks like he can barely walk. Like, he's shuffling around the party like he's going to keel over at any second.
And he has a butler. Why doesn't he have a driver?
That's an excellent point. It really is. I mean, but anyway, so they crash, and he wakes up in the body of his grandson. His consciousness is there. So, and basically throughout the film, George Burns narrates his own thoughts, so he can still be in the film, but not actually have to be bothered to actually be in the film. And so he basically uses his experience as a man who's lived life up to being 81 to help David. Or the kid's name is David, right?
David. Yeah,
it really
Jack
doesn't matter.
Is the other
folks.
Guy's name. No. Okay. So here's the weird. There's like tons of weird stuff about
there's
this.
There's so much weird about this guy.
There's so much weird stuff. First off, you have a body switcheroo movie, and then like you're in the same like family, so it's not like you switch. And
yeah,
like you're
like I wouldn't
different...
switch with you. We wouldn't suddenly switch places.
No. Well, and then, but there's nothing sort of like magical. It's almost like he wishes, but then there's nothing that happens to David. It's like he's in the coma the whole time.
Yeah, like that's the other thing. That's the first very strange kind of dark thing about this film. Like the grandfather ends up in the grandson's body. He's, you know, he's youthful again. He's running. He's jumping. He's having a great time. The grandson is in an 81-year-old comatose man's body in the hospital, and you know the grandfather realizes this, and he's like, oh well, that sucks for him, I'm gonna go try to get laid basically.
I know, he tries to do all the same stuff. I mean, the first thing he does is like go like run in a field, like with,
yeah,
like feel youthful,
like 23 Skidoo, I'm young again, I'm gonna go dance to Charleston, or and then, I mean, and like literally his beloved grandson is hooked up to breathing tubes at the hospital. Mm. He doesn't seem overly concerned. I think he honestly has a line in the film where he goes, "Sorry about your luck, kid," and that's the extent of it.
I know. It is such an odd movie. One of the oddest things about the movie that I felt was like wait, what is happening here? What is happening? Is that George Burns is married, like he's 81.
Yes.
But in the movie he's married to this other lady that's not like the matriarch of the family.
Yes.
She's like this like red haired, and she's probably like what, in her 60s or something like
and
that?
I get the impression she was like in her 40s. Like she's meant to be kind of femme fatale, but she's a little bit older, but a little bit kind of over the top. She's got these crazy dyed red hair, and she's wearing like slinky outfits.
Yeah, I'd say more like 40s, 50s. But anyway, definitely at least 20 years younger than George Burns. So, and then she comes after the grandson.
Yes.
The 18-year-old who's in college, like a freshman in college. Like,
yeah, she is thirsty for that D, basically.
And you're just like, wait, what is happening
here?
And
it comes out of nowhere. Like things just happen in this movie. There's no like setup or foreshadowing or really even character development at all. Like weird things just happen.
Like you just show up at his 81st birthday and she corners him, you know, trying to seduce him.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're like...
And like the grandfather's in the other room, like what was her plan for this? Like, you know, but anyway, but there's all kinds of weird stuff.
And then, but he's also supposed to be the nerd that the other guys like make fun of too.
But he's got like 50-year-old women pining for him. I don't know.
So basically you have to remember though, that when this movie was made in 1988, this was a couple of years after that George Burns made Oh God, right. And so this was kind of like George Burns sort of like second resurgence in the movies. It's like all of a sudden, since he was on like TV before and stuff like that with his television show, it was like, oh, here's this like lovable old man. And then so now we want like another movie that we can like put him in.
Yeah, but he's pretty filthy in this movie. Like, I mean, he is pretty lecherous.
But he's charismatic though.
Yes.
And the guy that David that plays him, the other actor guy, you know, he does actually a pretty halfway decent job of playing like George Burns, because George Burns in the movie is just basically playing himself.
Yes. And okay, yes, this slattery kid does a pretty good George Burns impression. But that's the thing that's very strange about the movie, is like when George Burns takes over his grandson's body and goes wandering around as him, like goes to college and goes to his classes, no one really stops to wonder, why is this 18-year-old kid suddenly talking like George Burns? Like, why is he suddenly shuffling around like an old man? Because he actually walks like an old man through chunks of the movie. Like, he's got like the Mr. Burns from The Simpsons, like, shuffle where he pulls his hands up a little bit and hunches over. Like, why would any college girl be like, I want to give me a piece of that kid who walks like a geriatric?
Yeah, and nobody really questions his behavior. I mean, I think at one point his friend, Pauly Shore, asked him if he feels okay.
Yeah.
I think his parents are kind of worried about him, but they didn't really
They don't actually check at him or show any real concern other than, are you all right, buddy? Okay, you're fine.
Okay. Yeah, you're fine.
You're suddenly just chain-smoking cigars and talking about Harry Truman, but that's okay. That's the other thing.
And drinking, too.
And drinking, yeah. Like, drinking like a fish.
And he's supposed to be 18, and I looked it up, okay? And the drinking age back in 1988 was 21. Like, it had changed just like a couple of years before, like about 85 or 86.
Maybe that was a problem with the script. The script maybe came before that. You never know. Like, maybe it was written before that change. But yeah, it is weird. But also, the college stuff is super strange. Like he's in class talking about, you know, all these factoids about Harry Truman. I don't know if they just made them up. Like, how Harry Truman's middle name is Sergio or some nonsense like that.
Sergey, yeah.
Sergey, thank you. Sergey, yes.
Because he was, like, Russian, but then he hid his name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is pretty, I mean, that's, I don't know if that's true or not. That's a pretty scandal thing just to make up and throw into a silly 80s comedy. But he says this stuff, and the professor's like, why do you know that? And he goes, well, Harry told me himself. And he goes, oh, wait, I mean, my grandfather told me. Like, why wouldn't everyone at that moment be like, this kid's a nutball? Like, it was the worst lie cover up I've ever seen in one of those kind of movies. Like, oh, yeah, I know Harry Truman. Wait, no. My grandfather knows him. I'm a normal 18-year-old guy. I'm a normal 18-year-old kid, guys. Want to go skateboarding?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Right, but it's almost like, even though but how they kept him, like, the dialogue, like you said, in the movie, where he's kind of like the voice inside.
Yes.
It was a way to keep George Burns in the movie, like, kept you hooked in the movie for the people that love George Burns, but he didn't have to act in it, right?
Yeah, but what about that weird dream sequence? There's a scene where David's dreaming, or it's George Burns in David's body dreaming about him going to meet David's girlfriend's parents. And instead of it being young David, it's George Burns dressed like David, having like this meet cute with her parents. And her parents are horrified because he's so old. And, and like they try to, it's all full of puns. And it's just, the whole thing is really kind of unsettling and creepy. Like they keep putting these choices where you have to kind of imagine like George Burns having sex with people who are much younger than he is. It's just really weird and really just uncomfortable.
But he can just turn around, like, can be like the dorky guy and then just turn around and like capture this, you know, really hot chick in the movie. He already has a boyfriend who's dating like the head of the track team or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, even though the guy that head of the track team is a class A jerk.
Well, and he's got a really weird face too. Not to be all like superficial, but that guy was really weird. Like, he had a gigantic forehead. Like, I mean, it's a really odd looking guy. A guy could only have gotten work in the 80s films when you didn't have to be attracted to be a movie star. But
yeah, you wonder kind of what George Burns' character, Jack, was thinking. Like, what is the end game?
Yeah.
Like, what is he trying to do?
Like,
is he trying to improve David's life? Is he trying to, like, relive his life through?
Yeah, I don't know. And that's what I'm saying. It's not clear at all what the point of the story is. Like, is he trying to take over David's life? I mean, if you watched it just blindly and not knowing how it turned out, because I watched this movie a lot as a kid, so I never really thought about how weird it was, but watching it now through fresh eyes, it wouldn't have been out of place for him to try to smother, you know, his grandson in the hospital and just take over his life. That would have been an appropriate way for the movie to end based on everything that came before, because it really seems like George Burns' character is trying to take over David's life.
Yeah, because it's like he has a new lease on life, right?
Yeah.
But at the expense of, it's his grandson's life.
Who he was very clearly, I love you. I want the best for you. But the minute I can take advantage of you and put you in the hospital and live your life, I'm going to do it. It's a really weird, like, single white female-esque sort of thing where I wouldn't have been shocked if he literally had tried to smother his own body in the hospital and just take over David's life. That's how weird and unsettling so much of this movie is.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like most movies, you know, within the first, what do you say, like 20 minutes, like we know like what the conflict is going to be, right? And we work through the conflict till we get to the resolution.
Yeah.
But we figure out the conflict, but then we don't know what resolution that we're working towards.
Well, yeah, there really almost is no conflict. Like, it just happens, and they're all like, okay, this is what's happening now. And it's not even a conflict, really. There's no moment of crisis. There's no real moment of character growth.
Yeah.
Things just happen and then it ends.
Well, and then one of the other things from a production standpoint, two of the things I noticed is, number one, there was a lot of like scenes that just seemed to like jump from one scene to the next. There was not a lot of continuity about what the characters were doing, how many days have passed in between. It just seemed to like you just got dropped into the middle of the like whatever was going on.
Yeah.
With no real pretext of what was happening.
Yeah. Stuff just happened.
Stuff just happened. And then there was like two fight scenes, like almost back to back.
Yeah.
Because first he takes the girl out to like a bar and they go dancing or
That's
whatever.
That's an excellent point. I wasn't expecting so many jumping spin kicks from 18 again. There's like five jumping spin kicks in this movie. Like for some reason her real boyfriend who George Burns is trying to break up their relationship. The girl's boyfriend basically confronts him in this bar and attacks him with like, you know, roadhouse style karate. And it's the most random thing.
And you're like, what is happening? Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, you do this the whole movie. Like, what is happening right now?
Yeah.
They're getting into a fight. And then all of a sudden you think that this young guy who is actually an old guy is going to be able to, you know, now he's in a young body and Barrel's going to be able to beat him up.
He's going to bring out some Jack Dempsey, like Queensberry Rules boxing and just whip ass. But that does not happen.
No. And then he gets beat. And then the girlfriend like rushes to his side and then they just go on and he gets fixed up.
So that's the moral of the movie. Boxing does not trump jumping spin kicks.
No.
Yeah. That's the point of 18 again.
But then after that, when they have like the party, remember? Yeah. Then after that, like, they try to have a the fraternity or whatever tries to have a toga party, and then the you know, David like shuts that down. Says no, we're gonna go for like a 1920s, like roaring 20s.
Yeah, we're gonna roar like we don't know the crash is gonna happen. Like, why do these college kids even know what the hell he's talking about?
Well, I mean, and I looked it up, and basically, if I did the math correctly, in 1988, if George Burns was 18. Like if you do the math, when the George Burns character would have been 18, it would have been in 1925.
Okay. So at least they thought that part of it out.
Yes. Which makes more sense. I mean, right in the middle of the 20s.
Well, and I mean, that's fine, but like, why did the other characters just go along with it? Why are they like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. The roaring 20s. That seems like a happen in time for a bunch of 80s kids. Let's all be flappers. You know what I mean? Why would they be into that?
Right. This was not a thing. And maybe that was the point of the movie. Maybe that was kind of show like, you know, let's bring this like kind of like, you know, thing back to these kids that are in the
80s. But that's not really. But again, it'd be different if that affected something in the story or seemed like it progressed something or made a point about something. It really doesn't. It just happens.
Right. But I mean, it's part of the character, though. It's part of the George Burns, you know, character. And I keep saying George Burns, but it's really the character's name. His name is Jack. But I mean, he's playing himself. So
the point is, it doesn't really matter what his name is, because I mean, you know, there's no real character development in this movie. Not really. Because I mean, really, the body swap comedy is not really based around it is a bit of an acting exercise, but also it's meant to kind of be a showcase for personalities.
Right.
Which we'll see when we talk more about Vice Versa in a minute. It's not really about, you know, it's about playing against type and, you know, they're not subtle performances ever, really.
No.
It's all very broad, and you can do good work in it, because I think there is good work in Vice Versa, which we'll get to in a minute, but there's not good work in 18 again. It's literally, it's all very broad, it's all very flat, and it's just, again, it's very strange.
Right, and then it just ends. The only reason that it even ends, really, is because his friend, like Jack's friend, says, hey, they're about to pull the plug.
Yeah.
Because you got to remember, the old guy's in a coma.
And he's probably been there for, at this point, months, it seems like.
Yeah, like at least, you know, at least a month.
At least a month, yeah.
So they decide to pull the plug. And he's like, no, you got to go because they're about to pull the plug.
Yeah.
And then you're not even left with a like, well, how do we reverse this then?
Yeah. Basically, he just runs into the hospital, grabs his body, and runs to the hospital, and smashes into something else. But apparently, all you need to switch bodies in this world is to hold hands and run into shit.
Yeah, like, okay, so my grandfather is on this bed, and I'm going to go head first, and I'm going to run straight into this like window.
Plate glass window,
and then just get up like, oh, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
As long as we hold hands and really believe in the moment that's going to happen.
And nobody was injured.
No one. He's 81 years old and he flew through a window.
I don't get it. I don't get it. Here's the other weird thing. David doesn't even know what happened. Does he even question what happened in these events? Does he even go, where have I been this past month? Yeah. Like, I remember, it was the 81st birthday. What day is it?
And is his grandfather going to tell him? Because I'd be like, Granddad, you're a f***.
Yeah, he never tells him. He's just like, leaves it up to mystery. Like, kid, it's all right, you know.
Yeah.
Like, he never really knows, like, what happened.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, pardon my French, but that's, I mean, I'd be like, you know, you jerk. You know, you left me in a coma for how long? You made out with a girl that I'm into?
Right. Yeah,
you creepy jerk.
Kinda, yeah, and then the guy gets the girl. Now, I will say, when I read the Roger Ebert review of this movie, I'm
actually curious what the patron saint of movie critics thought. You know, we're big fans of Roger here at the podcast. You know, he is sort of our patron saint. So, what did Roger say about the old 18?
He hated it. He gave it 1.5 stars. The one thing that he hated most about it was, I mean, of course, he said a lot of the same things that we did. It's a cliche, and he said a lot of the stuff was very sort of cliche-ish. But he basically said that he hated the fact that it ended, because the whole thing hinges like on this like race, like the two characters, the two younger characters. Make a bet at the end.
David runs track.
Right, David runs track, and they make a bet because they're playing poker, and then they said they bet it all, like double or nothing if you can win, because David wasn't that great of a track runner, but like George Burns' character was when he was younger.
Yes.
Right. So he says, I'm going to beat you at the semifinals or the regionals or the big meet or whatever that it is.
Yeah.
So, and then when he's running, of course, now that he's switched back to his regular character again. He's not George Burns. David is David. He's in the back again. He's not leading. He's just kind of hanging out in the back. And then he's like, all of a sudden, it's like he looks up and gets like a huge burst of energy and realizes like, oh, I've got to do... Like him and George Burns, their eyes meet, and he's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, well, and he locks eyes with a girl who he's always liked. He doesn't know that he's, you know, that this entire time his grandfather's been making time with her. So, you know, she thinks they're in a relationship, basically. So the kid's running this race, and he looks up and sees the girl he likes. And she's, like, cheering him on, and suddenly that gives him the burst of energy.
Yeah.
Like, suddenly he can just now all of a sudden be good at track because a girl kind of likes him.
Well, and Roger Ebert said that. I didn't even notice. He said it's so cliche-ish where the guy falls down and then gets back up.
Yes.
So he falls in like the most ridiculous way. It's the worst prep fall I've ever seen.
It was like he was afraid to fall down. And it's shot in slow motion. Like it would have looked so weird. Like he does like, it's like when, you know, you've got children. It's like when a kid tries to do a cartwheel and they're not good at doing cartwheels yet.
Maybe because he was wearing those like 1920s like track shoes.
Oh, yeah. George Burns gives his grandson at the end these old track shoes. Like, these will bring you luck, Sonny. They brought me luck. And in the last 10 minutes of the movie, like all the character arc stuff is literally, no, there is character arc stuff. It's in the last 10 minutes of the movie.
Right.
Here, these magic shoes will give you confidence to run a race fast.
Yeah.
It's ladies and gentlemen, it is the dirt worst. You know, I'm a film journalist. I watch movies for a living.
Yeah.
This is the worst thing I've seen in months. It is not good.
Well, I mean, you got to realize, remember, Esther, that we're going back to the treasure trove of things, and we're watching movies, so we can tell everybody about them, and we can discuss them.
Well, I want this recorded for posterity. This movie is not good. Screw George Burns.
I mean, I never was a huge fan of George Burns anyway.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about, let's move on to Vice Versa, a movie that actually is surprisingly okay.
So here's the weird part. All right, and I looked this up too. Okay. In 1980, like I said, there was these like body switch movies that were going on at the time.
Were these released in the same year, if I'm not right?
1988. They were both released in 1988. Big was also released in 1998. Big was kind of also a like a body switch movie.
Yeah.
But it's like he just became a different. He just became an adult automatically.
I wish I
was
big.
But
it
is a body switch movie. But this is not the movie we're going to talk about.
God, I wish we had watched Big instead.
But that's not the point. I mean, I hope everybody has seen Big, and I love that movie, and maybe, you know, we'll talk about Big on another episode. But the other, also, there was another movie that also sucked that we didn't watch, that's also terrible, was Like Father, Like Son.
Oh, and Like Father, Like Son, yes.
And that was made in 1987. It was released in 1987.
Starring Dudley Moore and?
The guy from Growing Pains.
That's not, you know, I said screw George Burns. Also, we're very anti-Kirk Cameron at this podcast. We're just going to throw that out there. Kirk Cameron has never done anything of value in the entertainment industry. I would fight the man if I had the opportunity.
So, yeah, Kirk Cameron and Dudley Moore. If you want to go watch it, that's up to you. We're not watching it. We're not talking about it.
Yeah, watch Arthur 2 on the Rocks instead. Still not very good, but probably better than that, because you know why? No Kirk Cameron. I would punch Kirk Cameron in the face. Let's put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah. So, but the other movie was this movie that I liked a lot when I was growing up, and it has one of our childhood characters that we both knew when we were growing up from the Wonder Years.
Fred Savage,
right. And it also has another character in the movie from you know, the Beverly Hills Cop movies, and that's Judge Reinhold.
Judge Reinhold, who got the above the title credit, like it says Judge Reinhold in Vice Versa.
Right, Fred Savage was not really a big movie star back then. I mean, he was kind of on Wonder Years, but I think Wonder Years was only on it had been on for a couple of seasons by then.
Maybe one, because I mean, he was still pretty young. But yeah, Judge Reinhold got the above the title end credit. That's like saying, you know, Michael Keaton is Batman. No, it was Judge Reinhold in Vice Versa.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, he's the biggest star in the movie.
He really is, and truthfully, He's really good in it. I mean, honestly, when the movie's starting, both they're both a little shaky. But let's go over the plot right quick.
So basically, Judge Reinhold, his character's name, we'll get to in a minute, but he plays Fred Savage's father.
Yes.
Okay, his parents are divorced.
Yes,
and his mom has remarried.
Yes,
and so but Judge Reinhold is this. Businessman, he's a buyer for this department store.
Yes, like a Macy's stand-in.
Right.
So if he was a person, he would be unemployed right now.
Well, yeah, because they still have buyers, right? But they're more kind of a facilitators. It's just that their roles have kind of changed. Like they don't go to Far East China and find these weird. You know, pots and stuff like that. Like, they already know what they want to get.
So right? they don't stumble across silver and gold encrusted skulls that you know, cause body swapping.
Right. Like, they buy the stuff that, you know, the other manufacturers, push on them. They don't buy these, really sort of authentic kind of stuff. The department stores really put up these cheap manufactured stuff. But anyway, the whole idea kind of hinges upon he's kind of this absent father.
Yes.
Right? Because his parents are divorced, but his parents are going on some sort of vacation or something.
Yeah, so you're talking about Fred Savage's character. It's just saying Judge Reinhold is an absentee father for Fred Savage.
Yes. So Fred Savage's parents are going on a vacation.
And apparently they can't stand the little guy because they leave him behind. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's got school and stuff.
Yeah.
And so they leave him with his father for a week.
A successful businessman who lives in Manhattan it's in Chicago.
It's Chicago.
Lives in downtown Chicago in a loft apartment. Yeah.
Right. Well, you learn very early on in the movie the kind of the mystical powers of this skull artifact. Yeah,
let's backtrack for a second. Another really weird opening scene.
Really odd.
Yeah, no context. We open in Thailand. It has the vibe of the Golden Child or Big Trouble in Little China or a kung fu movie.
Well, I kind of thought about this, and I thought the reason why is because they started off in Thailand. It's like they already are dropping you into this world where where you're actually going to figure out how they're going to reverse it and how they're going to how it all
works. They establish rules, which the other film did not.
No,
it's one of the many things that Vice Versa does that's better than 18 Again.
Right. So you imagine that you have this artifact and it has mystical powers and this guy is trying to smuggle it back into the United States.
Can we start by saying, talk about how cool the artifact looks, by the way? It's like this skull and like a silver base with like gold on the top and like silver encrusted eyes.
But the skull is upside down.
Yes.
It's sitting in the stand, yeah, like upside down, and you can actually move the jaw.
Yeah, which is silver plated. It's totally metal. It's pretty boss looking. I wish I had one on my coffee table at home, to be honest with you.
I can see certain people really enjoying that artifact or having that artifact. Yeah. Let's get back to the plot. So basically, we learn that Judge Reinhold is trying to, like, negotiate, like, all of these items for his store. Yes. He's there with his girlfriend, who also, like, works for the company.
Is a buyer, but for other kinds of things.
Yeah. Right. And so they're both there on this business trip to buy stuff from Far East China.
Yeah, it's all pretty convoluted for what they're trying to do. But at least they're trying to set something up.
Right. And then this other henchman, just like...
Smugglers,
take his stuff... Take this
cool like metal skull thing and drops it into their shipment, thinking he can...
Well, no, but they take it. They're from New York, so they take his vase or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and then they put it on this other guy so they can smuggle it in.
Yes, basically. So you've got your villains. These smugglers are basically your antagonists for the film, who are going to sell this artifact for thousands of dollars in America, and they use Judge Reinhold and his department store as basically a cover to smuggle this crazy skull thing into America. But what they don't know is the skull thing has crazy body switch powers.
Which they figure out. So here's the other thing, too, is like both like in 18 again, where he just wishes to be young again. It's not like David wished to be old again.
No.
Or wishes to be old. In this scene, they both like say wish they had each other's like they both are living together. They both kind of like get annoyed with one another.
Yeah, they're frustrated with each other.
Because the dad is like, you're cleaning up, you're making a mess, you're doing all this stuff. You don't understand what it's like to be an adult.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to do anything. Like, you're just
a kid. The kid's like, you don't know anything, Dad. My life is so hard.
Right.
I'm like 3 foot tall and no one respects me.
Right. Like, you don't know. Like, I don't want to ride. Like, he has to ride to work with like some other kid that picks on him.
With a kid that picks on him. Yeah. Who looks like he's about 10 years older than Fred Savage in the film.
Yeah, because the other guy's like a co-worker or something that. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, don't know, Dad. So they both wish they could be in each other's lives, and then they both grab that weird artifact.
They're arguing, and then they get the kids playing with it, and they grab it at the same time and say, man, I wish that I could be in your position. And then, basically, they have, they literally change bodies. Like they don't just magically jump consciousness. Their bodies literally change. She gets this kind of really weird scene where, Judge Reinhold's, where Fred Savage hulks out into and becomes like Judge Reinhold. Like, they do the Incredible Hulk effect from the old 70s TV show where, his body's expanding and his clothes rip.
Yeah, and, it goes dark, but then there's, light that comes in from outside.
And smoke, like a Foghat concert or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's and then they cut back and, Fred Savage is in the dad's clothes and it's all baggy and ridiculous. And Judge Reinhold is all hulked out in shredded shorts.
The other thing I have to say is whoever was the casting director of this movie was absolutely awesome, because here you have a very sort of low budget movie, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of the scenes are only two or three places.
Yeah. It's like their apartment, the department store. Judge Reinhold's office.
School. Office and then a jail and one thing, maybe outside of Chicago.
But it's five locations.
Yeah. Not very many locations. Most of it could be shot in the studio.
Yeah.
Basically for pretty cheap. But they were able to get some really not very well known actors, but and they're kind of character actors, but they really played their part very well.
Yeah, I've got to take a sidetrack here and say Richard Kind is in it as one of the businessmen, and he apparently does not age. He is a Highlander.
I love that guy.
He looks exactly the same.
I love that guy.
Like, that movie was back in 1988. He literally looks exactly the same. I was watching Red Oaks two nights ago, and he literally looks like he's 5 years older in Red Oaks.
And he plays sort of dumpy sort of character, you know?
Yeah, yeah. He's Richard Kind. He's not a character actor, but he literally just plays himself, but he didn't look a bit different. It kind of blew my mind. Like, I think he's either a vampire or a Highlander. Which, a Vampire Richard Kind movie, that's a movie I would watch.
Oh, right, right, right.
I wish I ran a studio.
Oh, right. But I think Richard Kind at the time might have been, I know he was a character in Mad About You about the same time.
Mad About You was not in 1988, was it?
It might have been later in the 90s.
I want to say it was later in the 90s.
I think it was probably after...
because 88, man. Yeah, 88 was long. 88 was like the time of like Family Ties and Night Court and stuff.
Right.
But anyway.
And Corinne Burr, she's in it. She plays a great like girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then the mom.
Is the mom from Malcolm in the Middle.
Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah.
She plays this great mom who's like this awesome character is like, no, what are you doing? Like. Just really kind of on it, mom.
Yeah, and like she's not shrilly, she's not awful. She's just a concerned, normal mom. It's pretty refreshing. Yeah. But I should talk about something. What struck me as really odd about the film is that Judge Reinhold and Fred Savage in the beginning of the film are not very convincing in their roles. Like, I don't really buy Judge Reinhold as an absentee father who's obsessed with his work.
No, I don't either. That was one of the biggest things that I didn't like. If I had to pick all the things about the movie that I didn't like, the one thing that I didn't like was that, like, I can't see Judge Reinhold as this like savvy business guy.
Well, and what's also really weird, I didn't buy Fred Savage as an 8-year-old boy. Like, he's something about him. He's too like he's too wordy. He's too verbose. So it's like, it didn't feel natural to me until they switched. Like, I could buy like Fred Savage as like this foul mouth, you know, businessman drinking martinis talking about, you know, keep Walter off my back while I get this business meeting done. Like, he felt more natural playing the grown-up even though he's a little kid. And Judge Reinhold, when he got to be like the child character, he like got all bashful and he really captured the mannerisms of a child. Like, I mean, the way he kept saying like dad all the time. Like, if you took a shot every time Judge Reinhold just exclaimed dad, you would die of alcohol poisoning. Yeah,
right. Yeah, I mean, the facial expressions alone were just awesome.
Like, he really feels like a child. And like, I mean, I've never been a big huge Judge Reinhold fan. I always thought he was kind of a niche 80s guy. I mean, I like Beverly Hills Cop and Fast Times at Ridgemont High, of course, but I was really blown away by how much he embodied this goofy kind of child. Like, he's had kind of a sense of embarrassment, like when he would do something wrong, the awkwardness that children have. He really nailed that.
Like when he went into the office and like thinks he's going into his office, but like it's the like the supply closet.
Yeah.
He's
there's a scene where he's like, this is such an 80s movie. There's a crossbow in the department store where the arrow's right there. He literally loads it and shoots it accidentally. It hits a mannequin like inches away from a customer. The mannequin falls over, knocks over a Christmas tree, and he just gets like this real like wide-eyed expression and runs away like a child. It is honestly legitimately funny.
Yeah.
And there's
legitimately funny.
Like, he just carries himself like a kid, and there's certain joyous moments where he just feels like a kid. Like when he goes to the kid's school and he's making faces in the window to make the other kids laugh, he feels like a child.
Right. Well, I mean, and even Fred Savage, when he's like barking orders at adults, expecting them to like listen to what he's saying, and they just go, "Oh, aren't you so cute?" You know, or whatever. Like,
but Fred Savage,
I'm gonna kill that kid.
If Fred Savage tells he's like, saying to his driver, "Don't you move, stay right here." Yeah. And like, he says it with such authority for such a little kid. Like, you really kind of buy that he's a man trapped in a kid's body. It's the weirdest thing. Like, he's not natural as a kid in the film.
Well, that's why I think they got cast. I think they got cast more for, I think where you had like father like son. Where they got kind of cast for who they were, right?
Yeah.
Like, but this movie, they're kind of cast for who they play.
Yes.
Who they're going to be, like, and I think that's not only the story is better and the storyline is better and, like, what we learn about the characters is better because they both, learn how difficult their lives are together.
Yeah, and they grow from it and they get closer. And when they actually say goodbye to each other at the end of the film, it's a little emotional. Because you can tell they've really grown to care about each other through having to take care of each other through this ordeal. It actually has an arc, and they learn stuff.
Right.
But let's go back to some more of the fun things about them. Because again, just because this movie is better than 1880 again does not mean it is immune from the weirdness of these types of films.
Right. Well, I mean, it does happen around Christmas time.
Yes.
So one of my favorite scenes in the movie is where, and I remember watching this as a kid, and I always would like turn it in because I also like was a drummer when, and you know, oh, yeah. And so I love when they're in the department store and there's this like guy like playing this weird,
like the most sort of electric guitar you've ever seen. Like, yeah, it feels futuristic for 2018.
It's like an electric guitar like you've never seen before. It's like an electric guitar and a keyboard like made together.
Yeah. It's like a laptop with a neck on it, basically. Yeah, it's you know, it's weird.
And then they sit there and jam, and even the guy, the salesman, like starts to play keyboards with them, and it's just like, and it's awesome. And then there's the scene where like all the businessmen, like all the business people from upstairs, like come downstairs on the escalator, and they're all like with their heads turned sideways coming down the
what works about that scene so much is that the guys who are playing the instruments look like they're having a good time.
Yeah.
Like, you can feel that they're having fun, and that comes across in the film. I mean, there's not a lot of laugh-out-loud moments in this movie.
No.
You know, it's not, like, uproariously funny, but there's so much, like, you can feel a sense that they're having a good time making it, and that good time is a little infectious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't help but smile and laugh with them because you can sense the fun they're having in it. So that, to me, alone makes it head and shoulders above 18 again as far as being a better movie.
Right.
But yeah, back to again weird stuff. Like there's going back to the villains of the film.
Swizzy Kurtz, oh my god, from Mike and Molly.
Yeah.
Most people will know her from Mike and Molly now if you see the film. But then she plays like an awesome, awesome villain.
Yeah,
and plays a really great part because she's this really fiery redhead.
She's a ball buster, Dad.
Yeah, she's a. She's really worried about your unit. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of one-liners. That's the thing, though. It's not really... That's about the only, like, really quotable, like, part of the movie.
Yeah.
It's not that, like, kind of campy.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I don't think it is that campy and kind of fun in that way, where it's just, like, a zany comedy.
Like, it's trying to be a real movie about something.
Right, exactly.
It's just they chose a weird vehicle to try to deliver their message, you know, with metal, like, voodoo skulls and, like, magic.
Right.
But yeah, the villains, the actor, her like henchman, her boyfriend in the film, there's a scene where he goes to like threaten Judge Reinhold in the department store, and he pulls a gun out in the department store, and like literally he has the gun out behind all these executives, pointing it over their shoulder, and like he's in the background just with his pistol out in the middle of this crowded store, and the executives all turn around, and do they freak out? They're like, oh God, he's got a gun, call the police. No, what did they say?
No, Richard Kind turns to him.
It's Richard Kind, and what does Richard Kind say?
He said, "Guns are in sporting goods."
Yeah, like it's the most normal thing in the world for this Guido looking dude, this mafia looking dude, to have a nickel plated 38 in the middle of the electronics department of this department store. If that happened today, he would have been tackled and beaten.
Yeah.
And they just hand wave it off like it's no big deal. And it is the weirdest thing in 2018 to see a scene like that, where he's literally got a gun in the guy's face. And he's like, oh, no worries. You're in the wrong department.
Yeah. I mean, there wasn't a lot of, like, I don't remember seeing a lot of, like, smoking or something like that in this movie. I know there wasn't 18 again.
Well, Fred Savage drinks the entire film.
That is one of the funniest thing. I mean, that whole scene where they're at home, too. Yeah. And talking to each other about their day, and Fred Savage is like, you know, got this martini in his hand, and he's saying these like really adult things, and then, you know, Judge Reinhold is like, Dad, you've got to go out with her. You're really worried about your unit.
And he's like, I've got to go out with her, Dad. She's really worried about her unit. Yeah.
And
there's a little bit of physical comedy there. It's just a little joke. I don't know. I can't remember exactly why it happened, but. But Fred Savage has got his foot. Oh, he was ice skating. He plays on a hockey team in the movie.
Yeah.
Fred Savage was ice skating and he trips. So at one point, when they're back at home, he's icing his ankle in a bowl full of ice. And Judge Reinhold brings him a martini because he loves his dad. He wants to have a martini.
Yeah.
And he literally stops where he hands the martini to Fred Savage, takes an ice out of the bowl where he's icing his foot, and daintily drops it into the martini. And then.
Yeah, because he says, you forgot ice, and then he just grabs an ice cube
and just, like, carefully drops it in. And then he walks away, and Fred Savage just nonchalantly, like, makes a face, but picks it out and throws it all aside. It's just such a little subtle thing, but it's actually a pretty funny little sight gag.
Right, because that's what a kid would do, you know, would just grab ice out of that bowl. You know?
Then they're not concerned with things being gross or germy or anything like that. Yeah.
Right, exactly. No, and then there's this, like, really weird, like, kind of Judas Priest
malice.
And then they go see, you know, he takes the girl out. And I mean, because he's like, you know, because he's supposed to be this, like, really... I mean, that's the thing about Judge Reinhold that I don't get. He's supposed to be this sophisticated guy, and he's like, oh, let's take my girlfriend out. And she's like, oh, did you get tickets to Mahler's Fifth?
Well, and do you know how they establish he's sophisticated? Because twice in the film, he asked
for Grey Poupon. Yes.
Do you have any Grey Poupon? they are at an Italian restaurant in the beginning. You can tell he's eating pasta. He's literally eating like tortellini or something.
And
he looks the way he goes, pardon me, do you have any Grey Poupon? I was like, oh, this is... why?
So cliche-ish for the time period. So cliche-ish. Yeah.
It's honestly the lazy... That's like a joke that should have been in 18 again, really. I mean, it was really out of place in the film. It's like,
no, and then he asked in Fred Savage when, you know...
Yeah, when the cafeteria
asked at the cafeteria at school.
Yeah, and that place has more of a purpose. But again, he was eating pasta. Who puts mustard on pasta, my friend?
Right, exactly.
Who puts mustard on
pasta? And I think that joke, and there was a couple times where they use words like dweeb or spaz, and it kind of dates it a little bit. And like malice, like this, like, you know, band or whatever. I mean, it kind of dates the movie some.
Yeah. Well, there's also that weird scene 18 again where they go to the club and it's all like punks. But it's like Return of the Living Dead punks. They all have like blue spiky hair and, you know, like when I was a kid... Watching movies, I thought every adult world had like just on the outskirts of town had like a club where kids met with blue spiky hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I know. It's just the way they dress. So I mean, because I was talking to one of my friends about this movie, and he's like, yeah, that's one of the movies that didn't really age that well. And I mean, yes, it was more about like modern times. I mean, it wasn't about. You know, it was kind of this fun movie at the time period. It's not this timeless classic or whatever, but I think that it is, you know, this movie that's a classic story about where the dad who doesn't really hang out with his kid, you know, is in his own world of adult world and says, well, why can't you, kid? Like, dude, like your life is easy and yada, yada, yada. And the kid is like, no, you don't understand what it's like to be a kid. You know, blah blah blah, and the
arc is a very classic arc of basically the characters have their consciousness expanded. They realize the world is bigger than what they see, and they gain empathy for each other. And that's a very basic way, a basic idea to have in a film, but it's effective and it's classic storytelling.
Well, it's because they
gain perspective,
right? Well, because the characters are in their own sort of bubble to begin with. Like Fred Savage's character is more about this school and his school life and all these things, and he wants to be in this band and make his band really popular. And then, but like you know, Judge Reinhold's character is like, well, I've really got to be successful in my career and I've got to advance and. And, you know, I got to really work on this campaign so that my boss will like me and, you know, all this kind of thing. So,
and it's very kind of a basic setup. It's very kind of cliche and classic, but it's still, I mean, it's a reasonably well-made movie. I mean, it's enjoyable. You know, it's not laugh out loud funny, but it's not by any means incompetent or hard to watch. It's a very watchable movie.
Well, that's another thing that we'll, you know, that we'll discover as we, you know, watch a lot of the movies from the 80s and from the 70s is like, you have movies like this, like, say this movie and say there's like another movie like Slitty Slickers, for example, where there's like this heartfelt, you know, stuff that's in it. It's not just a comedy, but there's also like some heartfelt, like real stuff, real feels. You know, sort of things in it.
They're trying to make a point. And I think every good film, even if it's slapstick, even if it's silly, even if it's fantastical, has a point in some way. And, I mean, again, as kind of just okay as Vice Versa is. And again, it's just okay. It's not like it's the greatest thing I've ever seen. But it has a point and has a message that it doesn't beat you over the head with. I mean, it just kind of, it's about what it's about. And they tell it in a fairly engaging, enjoyable way, and sometimes that's all you have to do is just be engaging and enjoyable.
Well, there's multiple storylines. I mean, you have the storyline of the henchman trying to get back their skull.
Mm-hmm.
You have the storyline of Judge Reinhold trying to advance his career with this, you know, Asian Far East campaign.
Yeah.
You have Fred Savage who's, you know, just trying to survive school and be this kid part and like really, you know, be his dad. And then you also have like them trying to get away with everything that they're getting away with.
And it leads to this really kind of fun visual at the end of the movie. There's a chase scene at the end of the movie when they're the heroes are trying to get the skull back, and they commandeer a police motorcycle.
Well, and that whole chase scene, to me, it was like almost like an homage to Blues Brothers.
Well, that in Chicago.
Chicago. And they, yeah. And what better to have a chase scene? You can't have a chase scene in Chicago unless you're racing, like, on the street that's right underneath the L train.
Yeah, that goes back to the French Connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's classic. But he has this great visual because when it happens, you think, oh, Judge Reinhold's going to drive the motorcycle. No, he rides on the back, and Fred Savage drives the motorcycle. And as they're shooting the scene,
well, it's a three wheeled motorcycle.
Yeah, it's a three wheeled motorcycle. But as they're shooting the scene, it's obviously a smaller stuntman who's driving the motorcycle, because suddenly in certain scenes of this chase, Fred Savage grows like 2 feet.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, he does.
I will be honest, I did not notice
that. It's like, I don't know if they found out, just a very wee stuntman, but he's easily 2 feet taller than Fred Savage. And it's so readily apparent, like, Fred, like, changes size throughout this chase scene. And it's just kind of a funny image, just one of those gaffes that you just kind of love and kind of make old movies endearing.
Well, I will say, I'm going to tell you right now, I mean, even though that you say that, like, oh, it wasn't this great of a movie, blah, blah, blah. Roger Ebert, okay, now he has a 4-star system.
It's a 4-star system, okay.
So 4 stars is like, go see it. Like, you must watch movie. He gave it 3.5 stars.
3.5 stars, really?
Yes.
so what did Roger say?
He basically was surprised as anyone, but he liked it for a lot of the same things that we did. And really, I watched the movie before I even read, like, Roger Ebert's, like, review, because, you know, I don't want his review to sort of influence the things I think about.
I had no idea. I'm a little shocked. Maybe he watched 18 again first, too.
Right. And he basically, he said it's just basically a matter of style. Like, it's just they're like you say, like the body language, like the sort of this fun, you know, and well done, you know, plot that they have made. And then when I even went and looked back at the, and you'll find this interesting because I didn't tell you this until now, is that when I looked this up on Wikipedia, it basically said that this movie, Vice Versa, is the American comedy film. It's the 4th screen adaptation from the 1882 novel from the same name.
Huh. I guess that's so. I guess the skull's probably part of that, because I mean, the skull seems like a very kind of like darkest, like you know, primitive man sort of thing. Like, you know, in old stories, used to be fascinated by primitive cultures, and they would always have like spooky artifacts. Because really, the skull looks like something out of like Indiana Jones. So it makes sense that they would do something like that, that it comes from an older source material, because really the skull is cool and almost seems like it should be from a different, completely different movie.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if the skull prop is based off something that happened in the earlier adaptions.
Now, I don't know. Yeah, the okay, first off, the book was called Vice Versa, A Lesson to Fathers. So it's really a lesson for fathers about their kids who, you know, say that, oh, your life is like so easy. And the Vice Versa is, you know, Latin meaning the other way around.
The more, but, you know, folks, the
right.
More you know.
But apparently in the book, which I have not read the book, it's from a magic stone brought by an uncle from India.
Huh.
So, but yeah, but I mean, it's, I'm sure it's a very sort of similar thing where, you know, these kids are like being, I don't know. It would be interesting to see, read the book, but basically it's like the whole thing. I mean, and that just tells you how classic like the story is of this body switch movie goes back to the, you know, late 1800s.
Well, and that's one thing that the film definitely has is a strong structure. You know, it's a well thought out movie. I mean, it's just not as funny as you probably hope. Like I said, it's charming. It's endearing. I mean, it'll make you smile a lot, but you won't laugh a lot,
right,
to be honest with you.
Well, and this too is probably more similar, like as far as like the heartfelt and the warm feels and all that kind of stuff. Maybe not quite as, you know, as much as like the movie Big, you know. But I mean, it's still a great, you know, fun movie to watch.
So, would you say this podcast so far is pro Judge Reinhold?
I'm pro for Judge Reinhold.
I am pro Judge Reinhold. But again, we are anti Kirk Cameron. We want it noted, and for the record.
And we're pro-Fred Pro Fred Savage.
Pro Fred Savage, pro Judge Reinhold. If they ever want to be on the show at any time, we will be happy to have them.
Right.
I would love to get Judge Reinhold's opinion on really anything. Yeah, what is he doing nowadays? Who knows? Judge, if you're out there, give us a call.
Maybe you'll call.
So, maybe he actually is a judge now.
It was actually maybe in Beverly Hills Cop, he went from detective and then
worked his way through the legal system
and then judge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got past the bar. Like,
yeah.
Know. Yeah.
And now he's actually Judge Reinhold. Yeah.
Judge. Would he be Judge Reinhold?
Yes. But you know, you just say Judge Reinhold because otherwise it'd be awkward.
Okay.
They would just think he has a stutter. You know?
So you've watched like tons more movies than I have. Okay.
Well, again, I have to do it. It's my job. I watch a lot of movies.
Right. You watch them. You read about them. So what? I mean, for other people and for other people listening to the podcast, what would you say if like people like, oh, I like you know this movie. What other movies are like it that would also be cool to kind of check out? I mean. Well,
the body swap genre is not a genre that's filled with a lot of great films. Let's be honest. It's just not.
Right.
There's not that many that are worth your while. Vice Versa is really towards kind of the top of the body swap genre. So I can really only think of one that I would call it to be a really legitimately good movie, and that's the Freaky Friday remake with Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan.
Right.
That's a legitimately good movie. So if you want to watch more body swap comedies, if you watch these and think, man, body swap is my thing now, that's what I would recommend.
But wasn't also Freaky Friday kind of like the same idea, sort of as Vice Versa?
Yes.
Where you have a mother and like a daughter, and then they switch, and then. Yeah.
But it's a charming film. It's got legitimately funny parts, and you know Jamie Lee Curtis is a treasure. You know, it's worth watching. It's a legitimately good movie.
Okay.
I mean, I would say in the upper echelon, you'd have the Freaky Friday remake, and then Vice Versa would maybe just be a rung below it as far as the quality films in the body swap genre. Because again, there's just not that many good examples. There are a lot of these things, surprisingly, but most of them just aren't very good.
No, I mean, like I said, we've already mentioned Big.
Yeah, there was Big,
and there was also a movie, Just One of the Guys. But Just One of the Guys wasn't a body swap movie. It was just a girl who dressed herself up to be a guy,
yeah,
you know, to play a guy, yeah. And that's more of a change sex.
More of a comedy take on Boys Don't Cry, really.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like you're just changing. You're staying the same age. You're in the same sort of thing, but it's just like you're a guy now. Like you're just changing. You're changing sexes rather than being.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's not really. It's body swap adjacent. Let's say that.
Right, and you weren't. It wasn't like. The person was body swapping because, like, oh, I feel like I'm a boy. It was like boys get treated different.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not being seen, you know, I'm not being judged as I would be, you know, as correctly because I'm a girl. So I'm going to be a guy.
Well, and that's sort of like Big, where the kid's like, you know, I want to be treated more like an adult. I wish I was big. And,
right. Because he gets picked on, and the girl that he was like after was, you know, kind of takes on the girl that, or the guy picks on him, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. But yeah, again, but those aren't true. And they're body swap adjacent films. So they have elements of body swap films, but they're not really body swap films. I mean, really, I mean, when you talk about body swap, we've already really covered with Freaky Friday and Vice Versa. Those really are two of the best examples of the modern body swap film. I mean, we could go through film history and pick out some other ones. But as far as what people are going to probably want to watch, I'd easily recommend Freaky Friday. And if you want to watch another one, if you have time, you know, Fred Savage and Judge Reinhold kill it playing each other. They really do. I mean, it's the most interesting thing about the movie. If you can find it on iTunes for a couple bucks, it's worth your time just to see Judge Reinhold act like a child. It's charming. It's silly. You can't help but smile at it.
I really think this is one of Judge Reinhold's best movies outside of, you know, the Beverly Hills Cop movies.
I would agree. I think that kind of wraps it up a little bit. So, but you know, this is our first episode. It's a big deal. You know, it's a big deal to have a first episode, our debut episode. So, you know, I made some phone calls. You know, I work in the entertainment industry. I'm a film journalist. So I reached out to my contacts and I said, can we get a guest for our first show? It's a big deal. So I've got a surprise for you, Ryan.
Oh, who was that?
I put in some calls, and I was able to get a hold of one of our greatest living actors, one of our greatest living thespians. I was able to get a hold of Mr. Christopher Walken, and he's going to come in just a moment.
Well, I don't know what that word you just said is, but I don't know what did you say? Did you say thespian?
I said, yeah, I mean, like, it means like an actor, Mr. Walken.
I'm not sure if that is a word you want to use to describe me, I think.
Okay,
but well, I did like the movie. It was very good.
So let me ask you, Mr. Walken. First of all, thank you for joining us. I know you're very busy. You're very busy, you know, dancing and being creepy. The body swap genre, you know, have you ever wanted to switch with someone else? If you could body swap with a type of person or another famous person, who would you body swap with, Mr. Walken?
I don't know. I'm just alive. I just like, I'm me. I don't know if I could be somebody else, you know.
You are an individual, Mr. Walken, and we're grateful to have you. So you said you liked Vice Versa, huh?
Fred Savage was very funny. I like him. I like him a lot.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Walken. I don't know about Ryan, but I'm a little uncomfortable right now. We really need to be going. I'm sure you have things to do and places to be. Maybe we can have you on again next week.
Okay, thank you. We'll maybe talk next time.
It's a pleasure, sir. It's a real honor. I loved you in Joe Dirt.
Well, yeah, he was kind of played a dirtbag character, but I did like to play him, yes.
You are next to Joe Dirt, sir. But thank you, thank you. And now he's leaving, folks. That was really weird, Ryan.
He's, you know, the funniest thing I ever heard about Chris Walken was when Clint Eastwood did an interview on Conan O'Brien. And, you know, Conan O'Brien asked about, I was like, oh, yeah, you worked on this movie, Jersey Boys. You worked with Chris Walken. He's like, you know, Eastwood just kind of sat back for a second. He's like, oh, yeah, worked with Chris, yeah. He's like, so what was it like working with him? He's like, well, he kind of marches to the beat of a different drummer. Let's just put it that way. He goes, but it's a good drummer.
I like that. I think that's a beautiful note to end on, my friend.
All right.
So, well, as we said before, my name is Matthew, and we thank you for joining us. And for Ryan, I want to say thank you for joining us. We'll be back again soon. Ryan, do you have anything you want to add before we go?
No, thank you very much for listening, everyone. We'll be back next time on the next episode where we'll cover and talk about some more movies, I promise.
And do yourself a favor, go watch some movies.
I've been up since 6, and I have a very tough day ahead.
I wish I could change places with you.
Well, I wish I could, too.
Inside Marshall Seymour, successful businessman, divorced father, and self-styled workaholic, beats the heart of a little boy. Because Marshall Seymour is about to become his 11-year-old son, Charlie.
Awesome!
And vice versa.
This happened all over America.
And what's going to happen to you? You're 6'2" with the brain of an 11-year-old.
Charlie may be getting to that age.
He's losing it.
Uh-huh.
I think he has a crush on me.
No way! He never told me you had to see my homeroom teacher.
You never told me what have you practiced.
What?
I'm in the tub, do you mind? This is the woman I couldn't live with as a husband. And now I'm going to be her son.
I'll do anything you want, Sam.
It's not what I want. It's what we want as a unit.
She's worried about your unit, Dad.
It's a Freudian nightmare.
Judge Reinhold.
Are you all right?
Can I look all right?
Fred Savage.
I don't suppose you have any gray poupon.
Vice Versa.
What if we're stuck like this?
Oh, my God. I have to go through puberty again.